Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Monday, April 25th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Good afternoon, Melody.
My voice just kind of went right there, so... My apologies to the listeners having to listen to the open and market report in this voice, but Al will be taking over afterwards, but I will be here listening just to keep him on the straight and narrow right now.
Good luck with that, Melody.
Yeah, I know. I thought
your
it sounded
impaired
good.
Condition, in your impaired condition, that just gives me an opportunity to run wild.
Uh-oh. Let's see what gold did today. Gold didn't run wild, but it did run up $5.30 today. $5.30 for gold at $12.38. Silver was up 0.02, back over 17 at 17.07. You have platinum up 6 at 1020, with palladium up a buck at 6.08. USDX today, I didn't have a chance to follow all the markets steadily today. I was reading the dollar was down as it is, 0.28, nothing much, but 94.84 with crude oil following down 95 at 42.78. And the papa markets, paper markets, a little bit of pressure on the Dow. I think it was down about 26 points. It was down bigger earlier in the day, but not a lot of action. Everybody's quiet. I think are there some kind of primaries tomorrow, Al?
I have no idea. I wasn't invited. They boycotted me.
Well, we do. We do. We have Pennsylvania. We have Maryland. Oh, that's what I got to do tomorrow. Okay. So all you states that have primaries, get out there and vote. Dow down 26 points, 17,977. The NASDAQ down 10 at 48.95. And the S&P down 3, 2,087. 10-year yield, 1.90%. Euro, 113. Foreign and Asian markets were all down. And I'm handing it back to you, Al.
Okay. Thank you, Melody. Got a number of things to talk about. Let me get up to the top of my list.
Just remember, Al, I'm listening. I'm here.
It's that I'm not afraid, Melody. Here's coordinated desperation. This is from Ms. Shedlock. He's talking about Kasich suspends campaign in Indiana. Cruz suspends campaign in Oregon and New Mexico. Too late to matter. The candidates running against Trump, of course, in the Republican primary are Kasich and Cruz, and they have worked a deal. Kasich is going to stop campaigning in Indiana. And the reason he's doing that is because they know that Cruz and Kasich are essentially splitting the vote of people that are opposed to Trump, right, in the Republican Party. And the net result is they, when they split the vote, Trump gets everybody who's voting for him. And Cruz gets roughly half of whoever doesn't vote for him. And Kasich gets roughly half of whoever doesn't vote for Trump. And then the result is Trump wins. So what they've said is, okay, Kasich is going to bail out in Indiana. And Cruz is going to bail out in Oregon and New Mexico. When Kasich leaves the campaign in Indiana, it opens the door for Cruz to be the only candidate against Trump in Indiana. And this enhances the possibility that Cruz will get enough votes to perhaps beat Trump or, who knows, maybe deny him. Well, he's got to beat him. I think that's what it has to do. I think Indiana is a winner-take-all state. And if there's only two people there, you either win with 51% or you lose with 49%. If there's only, actually, that's kind of a foolish strategy. They're throwing this into a, it may be that they have to get 60% or whatever in Indiana. I don't know what the rules are there, to take all of the votes. Maybe that's what their strategy is, and it's not just a 50-50. Melody, did you have something you wanted to try to say?
Well, yeah, you know, there's something going on in Pennsylvania, too. I was watching a video earlier today, and it was like if Trump wins over 50%, he only gets like 17 of the delegates, even though there's like 54, because it's based on the different of the three different districts of the delegates that he has to carry out the votes in order to get all of the votes. So if a person's in there voting and he thinks he's just voting for Trump, you have to understand how the delegates work. And, you know, I don't ever recall ever voting, and maybe, you know, it's my fault, and perhaps I should admit this on the radio, but I never realized that, except for this election, how important those delegates are and how you vote. So if you're voting tomorrow, you better, you know, get online and check out and have an understanding of, you know, just voting, you know, putting your X in the Trump if you're voting for Trump or for any other, for that matter. Understand how those delegates play out and make sure you know who those delegates are assigned to make sure that you also X those. So it's quite a learning process, this election, and one that is, you know, it's opened the eyes of many.
Yeah, I understand. I think one of the big points is who's really running this election? Who is really selecting the candidate? That's the question. All right, because whoever it is, it apparently is not necessarily the people that vote for candidates or vote against them. The voters in these primaries, their elections are their choices are merely advisory. All right, they don't control anything. We're just taking a popularity contest, and if most people vote for Trump, well, then the adults, if most of the little kids vote for Trump, then the adults in the Republican Party will still decide whether or not Mr. Trump is a suitable candidate, and maybe they'll appoint him, and maybe they won't. But it's opened up a Pandora's box here that does not inspire confidence in the Republican Party. It inspires a certain amount of antagonism, and I don't doubt that the same thing's going on in the Democrat Party, although it's not obvious from the way people are conducting this election. Trump has made something happen in the Republican Party where he's forced them to reveal things that they've been getting away with for, who knows, a century.
Well, this,
I don't know how long the Republican Party and the Democrat Party have been around, and I don't know how long the current rules have been in place, but it's entirely possible that they've been getting away with this for a century. They let you have the primary elections. Yeah. You go ahead, cast your little vote. But you're voting like kids playing Monopoly with Monopoly money. You may wind up a billionaire on the Monopoly table, but you really don't have any money. It's kind of the same thing. You may vote for who winds up winning and is nominated and say, yay, I voted for Trump, or I voted for Kasich, or I voted for Cruz. But in fact, it's just kind of a futile gesture.
I mentioned this before, though. Ron Paul was running on that ticket, too, thinking that he could win by going after the delegates. Nobody paid him any attention. He didn't get the press. He didn't. I didn't hear any talk show people talking about his delegates. It was more that people couldn't figure out what he was doing. Why wasn't he going the mainstream route and running the commercials? So Ron Paul knew how the system worked, but he just didn't get the media attention, and it didn't work out for him.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where I wonder, you know, what it implies is that even if you know how the system works,
the system has to work for you.
No. Well, maybe it has to work for you, or maybe it has to work even against you.
Yeah.
To make an issue out of it that the public is able to
against
see and understand.
Yeah.
But as long as Ron Paul is saying, oh, wait, I understand how this thing works.
Well, no, but
everyone
he was
else
going,
said,
and
yes,
he was
yes,
smart.
Yes, yes,
he was.
No,
he
I
was,
know he's smart.
He was
so
smart.
What?
And he was trying to win the election by the delegates. And now this year you have an election where the delegates are making the difference. And anyway,
it's, you know, they talk about we live in a democracy. No, we don't. All right. Nor should we. Our Constitution guarantees to each of the states of the Union a Republican form of government. In other words, according to, I believe it's Article 4, Section 3. No. I don't recall clearly. I could dig it up. I'm not going to. But each state is guaranteed, and they expressly, and they use the term, Republican form of government. All right? It means there is a Republican form of government in Illinois. There's a Republican form of government in Oregon. There's a Republican form of government in Texas. Does not guarantee a Republican form of government for Washington, D.C., it doesn't guarantee it for territories. It does not guarantee it at the national level. At the State of the Union level, you're supposed to have a Republican form of government. What does that mean? Very few people even understand the question, let alone the answer. We are told that we live in a democracy, but in fact, the word democracy does not appear in our Constitution. They didn't say you were guaranteed a democracy. In any case, we don't have a democracy. We are led to believe a democracy is when everyone votes on all the issues. The democracy means that you and I and Melody, we are essentially the legislature, all of us. And every time Congress decides to vote for or against a particular bill, if we are living in a pure democracy, everyone, all of us get to vote. Right? And this is not such a dumb idea. In the past, it would have been impossible, but given the internet, it's absolutely possible. We could have a democracy, a true democracy, where everyone gets to vote, and let's suppose somebody came up with a bright idea like Obamacare. Well, then everybody would get to vote, yes or no. That would be democracy. What we have is a representative democracy where we don't vote on the individual bills. We don't vote on Obamacare, for example, or the defense spending or any of the rest. We're not called to do that. We're called to vote to select some people to represent us to Congress. And we select a congressman, we select a senator, we select a president of the United States, and then they decide what happens with the laws that are going to be ratified, are going to be proposed and voted for, voted against, ratified by the president. They make up their own decisions, and they represent us in Congress. Now, that's not a democracy. That's a representative democracy. You and I aren't voting on Obamacare. We would if it was a real democracy. It's not. We just vote whether or not we're going to elect Kasich or Trump or Hillary or whoever, or Bernie. Point is we have a representative democracy, which is the same thing as, which is virtually the same thing as an aristocracy. When you talk about a form of government, when you talk about forms of government, you start out with a monarchy. Monarchy means one man or woman holds sovereign power. That's how you distinguish between one government, one form of government, and another one. The first question is, who holds sovereign power? And you answer that question, and it will tell you whether you have a monarchy, an aristocracy, or a republic. Huh? In a monarchy, one man or woman holds sovereign power as a king or queen. All the rest are subjects. In an aristocracy, a limited group of people, it could be some families, it could be the royalty, it could be the establishment, but a limited group, it could be the Congress, a limited group of people hold sovereign power. All the rest are subjects. In a republic, all the people hold sovereign power. Huh? And that's what we have, but republic all by itself covers a lot of territory. And, for example, the communists, they had a republic. You may remember the former Soviet Union, the proper name was Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. Republics. Communism had republics. A republic all by itself is not the guarantee of freedom, prosperity, one thing or another like that. If you want the Republican form of government, it's a kind of republic, but it's a kind that has been virtually unseen prior to the beginning of the United States of America. The Republican form of government raises the second question. The first question, when you want to figure out what kind of a law form you have, what kind of a government you have, is who holds sovereign power? Right? And when we say, okay, all the people hold sovereign power, the next question is, for the republic, in what capacity do they hold sovereign power? You can have a republic where the people hold sovereign power as a collective. That's what you have with communism, socialism, and even democracy. It's a collective. You and I vote, and whoever gets 51% of the vote wins. The vote is intended to express, demonstrate, discover the will of the collective. Democracy is a collectivist form of government, unbeknownst to most people. The Republican form of government does not assume we are all subjects. It assumes we are all sovereigns. We hold political power. We hold sovereign power as individual sovereigns rather than as a collective. And that may be a little bit difficult to understand. It may be a fantastic claim to a lot of people, but it's something I've been looking at for 20 years anyway, and I believe it's true. So we're told we have democracy. Yay, democracy is not that big a deal. But this country started out with the ideas expressed in the Declaration of Independence that made each of us a sovereign, declared we each got our rights from God, and on the basis of that, we were equivalent to King George in England. You're a sovereign, I'm a sovereign. Government hates that. It doesn't even like talk about it, right? Doesn't want people to talk about it because it doesn't want the public to find out you were intended to be an individual sovereign. And government, and if you're a sovereign, the government is your servant. If you're a subject, the government is your master. And that's part of the reason we have the problems we have with government right now. They don't want to be the servant. they want to be the master. And so they say, hooray, you have a democracy. And I'm saying, hey, democracy doesn't even appear in our Constitution. Let's take a break. Confusing subject. Let's take a break for some commercials. I'll be back with Melody Cederstrom on financial survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. I don't know if that was Melody coughing in the background or was her dog Ruby.
It's my watchdog, Ruby. We do still sound a little bit different.
I
don't bark.
For us to tell sometimes and
she's a barker, but she's not a... Anyway, I just want to remind the listeners, we do have some fractional pieces. If you're looking for American Gold Eagles, we have the 1/10th ounce, $139. We have the Swiss francs, the 20 brilliant uncirculated, 20 Swiss franc for $275. And we have the British sovereign, almost a quarter ounce, and all our coins are brilliant uncirculated. You know, there's only a few dollars difference when you get into the difference from particularly the foreign coins. And I was like, why buy something trashy, beat up, and, you know, have some of your gold worn? You still want quality, folks. And if somebody can save you 50 cents, is it really worth it? I don't think so. So all our coins are BU condition. And, you know, I see websites online where they have 1 to 5, you pay one price. 1 to 15, you pay another. 20 to the 30, you pay. You know, and we don't do that here. Everybody gets a good deal. If you do buy volume, yes, we do lower the price for you. And, you know, we will work with you. But really, for the most part, we offer a good price for everyone. And I don't see why people who don't have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to spend, why they should subsidize other orders. So we're very fair in our pricing, and we still beat everybody. And that's just it. Our prices are so low, we don't have to give you little groups where you can save, you know, 50 cents here and 50 cents there. So give us a call, folks. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Website, dgscoins.com.
Okay, Molly, we got a call from Jim.
Yes.
Didn't know if you were going to get through that or not, did you?
Yes, I did.
Okay. You got through it. Yes, you did. I don't know if you... but Jim from West Virginia is on the line. Hello, Jim.
Hello. Let me give you a little bit of my personal background. Me, myself, and I radio, I don't like. Doesn't make for good radio, but this has to do with my dad. He was a chemist, very, very good chemist. He worked for Union Carbide Research. And Carbide had a hard time finding patent agents, not attorneys, who knew anything about chemistry. They were ringed around Washington, D.C., but they didn't do a squat about chemistry. So they told my dad, we want you to become a U.S. patent agent. And believe it or not, he passed on the first test in 1953. And I can remember he bought Blackstone. He bought a law dictionary. I still got a 1950 law dictionary. And then he found out that it was a bunch of BS, that it was an administrative law. The rules of evidence did not hold. At that point, and he talked to some of the patent attorneys who were up now. To be a patent attorney, you had to have a degree, which was a science degree, like, you know, a Bachelor of Science, and you know, law school. So for whatever reason, he found out from them that it had nothing to do with common law. It had nothing to do with what we think of it. It was a corporation, and it worked under administrative law.
Yep.
It's just as bogus. The patent court is just as bogus as the FCC court, and I've been in FCC court, but long ago, Baltimore and then Washington. I was attached to a radio station. I had troubles. They didn't charge me directly, but it's just like a hearing for the Department of Motor Vehicles. Okay.
Yep.
Matter
and
of
it
fact,
is just like it's not just a similarity. You're dealing. If you're going into one of those hearings, you're going into an administrative hearing. And very few people understand what administrative law means. One of the things that we're guaranteed in the Constitution of the state of Texas, for example, it's expressly guaranteed, and it's implied in the federal Constitution, is separation of powers. And all the powers that are legislative are confined to the legislative branch of government. All the powers that are executive are confined to the executive branch of government. All the powers that are judicial are confined to the judicial branch of government. It is believed that by separating these three fundamental powers of government into three different jurisdictions, we keep the government at bay. We hold them at bay, and it resists their impulse to overwhelm us and impose their will in all cases. Separation of powers is something we are guaranteed expressly in the Constitution of the state of Texas. If you do a little study on administrative law, and I have, right, you can find that you can find an extensive description of administrative law. It might be 50 or 100 pages in AMJUR Second, American Jurisprudence Second, and they'll tell you that administrative law, they refer to it as the fourth branch of government. They refer to it several times as the fourth branch of government. It's not a metaphor. They're telling you something. There's no fourth branch of government in the Constitution of the United States. There's no proviso for a fourth branch of government in the Constitution of the state of Texas or any other state in this country, so far as I know. If we've got a fourth branch of government, something strange is going on. What happens in administrative law? They tell you expressly that they combine all three fundamental powers of government operate in combination, all right? If the guy you're dealing with at the administrative hearing, he has judicial power, executive power, and legislative power, right? He combines all of them. That makes him the sovereign. He can do anything he wants. If you're willing to, if you voluntarily walk into the administrative, say, come on down, we're going to have an administrative hearing. Okay, walk in the door and watch what happens. They can kick you around any way they like in the context of administrative law. You have virtually no power to resist whatever it is they have decided they're going to do. So this is a dangerous thing. It's a tyranny. It's article, or it's the Title V, if I recall correctly, the United States Code deals with administrative law. So in any case, your comments, your suspicions about administrative law are not misguided.
No.
It is difficult, dangerous, and unconstitutional. But one good thing about it, if you understand it, you can tell people, I'm one of the people, not one of the citizens or inhabitants, occupants. I mean, it's a word game, but you got to walk in the door and say, I'm one of the people of the state of Texas. I am entitled to separation of powers. I do not consent to administrative process. Now,
well, my dad explained it even easier. And, this was one of his sore points, but he said, okay, let's say he said there's either common law or Rex Lex. Rex Lex meaning the king's law, okay?
Yep.
Whatever the king is. And the example was this. He said, okay, you're over in the school system, and there's a rule book of your behavior at the school. This is good. And if you get in trouble, you go to a member of the administration, not a teacher, the vice principal. And basically, they hold their little court. And Rex Lex, well, who's Rex? Who's the king? Well, whoever wrote the rule book. So essentially, it's the same thing as getting in trouble at school. You don't have freedom of speech. You don't get a lawyer. You don't get to read your rights to you. But that's administrative law in its simplest form. Anyway, it was a little bit of a tangent there. But the bottom line is very simple. It is not what it was purported to be. And I can remember when I was a kid, I brought a book home, To Kill a Mockingbird. And he looked at me and said, this is a bunch of BS, that's propaganda. Whoever gets the judge the versus with the bestest gets the bestest. And he was right.
Yeah.
Now, insofar as that's concerned, I don't know what the solution is to it. You have the solutions. You're aware of it. I'm a people. I do not submit to administrative law. I don't know
if
it's magic.
It's presumed that you voluntarily entered into administrative law. That's one of the things I can't absolutely prove it, but everything I see indicates they operate on the presumption. Well, you came down here. You must have consented. Ignorance is no excuse. The eyes of law, you must know what you're doing when you walked into our hearing. You know, we told you it was administrative. I mean, if you read through 5,000 pages of text, you could figure it out. It's presumed you walked in voluntarily, and the point is if you can express yourself in a way where you say, no, I'm not volunteering for administrative process or procedure. I do not consent. I don't have to because I'm one of the people of the state of Texas. I'm entitled to separation of powers, and therefore I don't have to accept administrative process. The argument can be made.
Well, I'm glad you brought that.
Happened, and was it going to work every time? Don't know.
I'm glad you brought that out, but I'm going to mention this much. I've had several, this has been interesting to me for about half a century. I've had several different attorneys tell me very simply, hey, that doesn't work in this court system. We put together, grand juries back in the 80s and some people made presentments. I wasn't on it. I was just on the fringes. I couldn't do it because of my work schedule. But at any rate, there was an attorney who was 80-some years old who was helping us. He had been litigating for like 30 years, and he said to me, well, this is proven to me there is not one single court in West Virginia which adheres to the law, just get ready for blood in the streets, and that was the late 80s when he said that. Eventually, all this is going to come apart, but going back into, you were talking about a democracy, this, that, and the other, almost invariably, democracy sinks into socialism. the have-nots realize that they can get more from the have-mores until the have-mores have no more, and then all sinks down into a police state called communism. It's boom, boom, boom. We have a representatively elected republic. Now, if we had a pure democracy with guaranteed rights for the individual, I guess that would be a republic of some sort. But the bottom line is it's even more obtuse than that. You got to understand, folks, the Republican Party is a corporation incorporated in 1860. Its constitution is the Uniform Commercial Code. It is a customer survey, and I've known this for about 40 years. So the election is not an election, it's a customer survey. And because it's a corporation holding an election, it does not have to adhere to anything except its own rules. A corporation has to do what the owners tell it to do. Supposedly George Soros owns controlling interest in both parties. I don't know. But this whole deal with the voting, people have been said, oh, the Diebold machines. Meaning the Diebold machines are screwed up. In 1969, I saw a photograph of the back of a mechanical voting machine. I've told this story before. With a description of how it could be rigged, so it could read the exact opposite of whatever lever you pulled. There's a deal where the curtain came in behind you, okay? Thought you had privacy? Yeah, right. But anyway, let's say that you voted for an R. The machine would record a D. So voting actually did the exact opposite of what you wanted to. So you actually did more harm to your cause by voting than not. Yeah. Now, that was a mechanical voting machine. At one time, I had a copy of the patent for the dang thing. Dad got hold of the patent number and got hold of a copy of the patent. I was upset with the newspapers when I found out about this, and that neither newspapers or management would let the public know that the reporters weren't even allowed to look in the back of a voting machine, much less take pictures to verify. I was extremely upset with this. Cried myself to sleep. Voting shot. My trust in the local newspapers shot all the same night. Same day.
So Dad says, "Well, welcome to the real world, huh?"
Right. I became so cynical. I walked on the dark side for a while. Me, myself, and I, to you know where, with everybody else. I became a hedonist, a Satanist, for several years over it. Because everything was like, I already knew about the bogus schools. There's some bogus media, the bogus money, the bogus wars. I mean, what wasn't bogus? So I said, from now on, it's me, myself, and I. And I walked the dark side. Thank God I got saved out of it to the point of suicide. So that's how deeply this affected me. Voting and the local media I had trusted. Gone. Now, everything's a fraud. Everything's a ruse. They're all corporations, folks. So let me mention this much. The primaries are nothing more than customer surveys. It would not surprise me one bit. There's a little hole in the voting machines around here. Wouldn't surprise me if that's a camera. In third world countries, let's say that a village votes against the administration. After the administration goes in place, they go out and kill the whole village. Voting it's always been a mess. And it was hard for me to believe. But anyway, Dad got the patent number. He got a copy of the patent. We took that down to the newspaper and said, listen, there's your verification. You can prove it. It's on the patent drawing that they're designed to be rigged. Still wouldn't run the story.
Yeah.
1906 voting machine. Now, people call me conspiracy theorist. I just report facts, no conspiracies. People say I'm cynical. Duh. How cynical can you get? But now this whole corporate issue is something nobody gives enough attention to. For instance, let's say that you're...
You got about 40 seconds left, Jim.
Can you hold me over?
No. I got another caller who's been waiting for the whole segment.
Oh, I'm sorry. They're all corporations. That's where we can have agreements between countries, which are in fact corporations. Thank you all for everything, including the platform. God bless. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, Jim. This is Jim from West Virginia. We're going to take a break for some more commercials. Got another caller, Joe from Arkansas, and we will get back to Joe when we return from our commercials. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Thank you. Is your PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 for international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. And Joe from Arkansas has been waiting patiently, and I assume he's still waiting patiently. Joe, are you there?
I'm still here. Hello, Al.
Congratulations on your capacity for patience.
All right.
What's up, Joe?
That's the first time anybody's congratulated me today, so I'll take that as a compliment.
So it's the best congratulatory message you've had all day.
Uh-huh.
Do I get an award for... Do I get some sort of an award for being the most congratulatory person in your life today, or what?
I'll congratulate you on being such a congratulatory person, Al.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
What do you got for us, Joe?
Okay. Well, I wanted to make some comments on three of the issues that you've been talking about. Number one, concerning how the Republican Party is choosing their presidential candidate in the primaries and all this kind of thing. You know, what would be interesting, I think, would be find out how do the smaller third parties, like the Constitution Party, the Libertarian Party, the Green Party, and so on like that, how do they choose their candidates for president in the various offices? You know, because I have never heard of any kind of primary amongst those parties where, you know, all the people that consider themselves Libertarian would vote for who they want for the presidential
candidate. I've run as a Libertarian candidate one time in the past. I ran for the steep Supreme Court of the state of Texas. I even got 201,000 votes for it. That was back in 1992. But they have a convention. They don't have primaries, or at least the Libertarian Party didn't at that time. They just had a convention, and everybody who wants to be a Libertarian showed up at the convention, and you voted. Pretty much you had to raise your hand or clap your hands or something like that. It was fairly informal because they didn't attract... It wasn't like they had 50,000 people showing up. There was a room full of 500 or 1,000 people, and they made their choices.
Yeah, that's how I kind of figured it would work. And but I think the big difference between the Republican Party and these other third parties is that anybody that's chosen at the convention, so it sounds like with these smaller third parties, anybody who wants to be a delegate can go to the convention and be a delegate. You know, basically, whereas with the Republican Party, the Democrat Party, you know, not everybody that considers themselves a Republican or Democrat can go to the convention and be registered as a delegate and get to vote.
They
in the
control
nomination.
Who is going to be the delegate is what you're telling me. They control who will be the delegates. And even if the majority of the people in the Republican Party vote for Delegate A or Delegate B, if both of the, it's like a communist election where you can vote for Comrade A or you can vote for Comrade B, but you're going to get a comrade. That is to say, you're going to get a communist. To some degree, maybe that's what's going on with the Republican Party. By controlling who the delegates are, it doesn't matter who they're called on to represent. They're already in the system, all right? They're part of it. They're part of the fix. That's the implication. I don't know that to be true, but that's the implication. Does that sound reasonable to you or not?
Yeah, that sounds about right. And it looks like the big problem with the Republican and Democrat parties, especially the Republican Party right now, is that, you know, you figure that, okay, with the smaller third parties, the Libertarian Party, Constitutionalists, Greens, and so on like that, anybody that's nominated as a candidate, you know, is, you can be pretty sure that they are going to be somebody that supports the principles and aims of that party. Whereas with the Republican Party especially, you know, it seems like the party bosses want something completely different than what the grassroots Republicans want. So anybody that's chosen by the party bosses and the delegates that they manage to get, you know, selected as delegates, you know, they'll want something completely different than what the grassroots wants, and that's the big problem in the Republican Party, as I see it, is a big split between the leadership and the people, and the grassroots. And
doesn't that same split exist in the Democrat Party, though?
I mean,
I'm wondering if the Democrat Party. I think Jim was the one who said earlier he thought that Soros owned majority interest in both the Republican and Democrat corporations. Now I don't know that that's true or false,
but I think the results of this year's elections is showing that the Republicans are generally smarter than the Democrats, because the Republicans got Jeb Bush out of there right away, whereas the Democrats, still a lot of the Democrats, are supporting Hillary.
I get what you're saying. It looks to me, when we start to talk about this, it looks as if both parties are controlled essentially by the same people. They're working for the best, the welfare of special interests. But in the Democratic Party, I suspect, like Hillary, a lot of people think she's working for Wall Street. Most people suspect that the Republican Party, Ted Cruz, for example, going to be working for Wall Street and people associated with Wall Street. Wall Street may be a bad label, but the difference is, if I'm a Democrat working for Wall Street, I have to frame my arguments in order to encourage a bunch of people who believe in Democrat values to vote for the candidate for Wall Street. On the other hand, if I'm running in the Republican situation, I'm still representing Wall Street or the establishment or the super rich, the oligarchy, but I have to frame my arguments to deal with the Republican people who believe in hard work and one thing and another like that. In both cases, we're framing different messages, but we're electing people who have the same idea. We're going to do the best we can for Wall Street, the oligarchy, the elite, the super rich, whatever. Now, do you think that's true? Do you think that's a little bit true, a lot true, not true? What do you think?
Well, I would put it a little bit differently. I think basically you've got the right idea, but I would put it a little bit differently. I would say that the grassroots people in both the Democrat and Republican parties, you know, they want the government to represent the interests of America, and they want the government to do something good for the American people, and they want the government to support America as an independent country, and they want America to be its own nation, basically independent its own nation. Whereas the leadership in both of the parties, they do not consider themselves Americans anymore. I don't think they consider that their job is to do what's good for America. I don't think they give a damn about the welfare of the American people or the well-being of the American people or anything like that. I think they consider themselves representatives of the world government, here to manage American affairs for the benefit of the world government. And their job is to do whatever is necessary, lie to and cheat and steal and everything like that, deceive the American people, you know, in any way they have to, in order to suck the resources out of America and out of the American people in order to strengthen the world government. I think you know, that's the way I would put it. I think it's basically the same idea as what you're talking about, but
no, I agree. I agree with you. I agree with everything you said there. It's just a question of what labels do you put on this? But a standard Ted Cruz is going to tell the people in the Republican Party whatever lies they want to hear in order to get him elected to do what's best for the New World Order. And Hillary, she's got a different group of people. They've got a different set of values. So she has to give them a different set of lies to get her elected. But either we get Hillary, we get Cruz, either way, we're going to get somebody who's not working for the American people. They just say they are, all right? But they have two different stump speeches, essentially, one directed for Republicans, one directed for Democrats, but the result is the same. And there's the danger and certainly basis for cynicism. I think Jim was talking in the previous segment, he was talking about his own cynicism at times when you begin to see what's happening here. What do you think should be done? What do you think can be done?
Of course, the biggest problem I see is that so many of the American people, the vast majority of the American people that I see, you know, just care about their personal lives and don't care about politics and just kind of let the politicians get away with anything. And, you know, they don't really participate. That's the biggest problem I see. It's just so, at least around here, it's just so hard to find anybody that you can actually talk to in any sort of intelligent way about politics and is actually interested in politics. You know, it's just a very small number of the American people, I think, that take any sort of intelligent interest in politics and try to do anything about it. And so that they're kind of overwhelmed, you know, the small number of them against the power of the power structure. But some people
have. What do you think the fundamental power of the power structure is?
Fact that I'd say the media is one part of it. Control of the
how do they get
and everything
media
like
support?
That. You know, is another
how
one of it.
How do they get media support?
How do they get media support?
Yeah.
Well, the same people that control the government control the media. The same, you know, big money interests
how do
own
they control
big media.
Them? How
you
do
know,
they
also own most of the people in the government.
Well, you said the magic word there when you said own. The difference between, you know, people like yourself and me and probably most of the people listening to the program, we approach politics from something of an idealistic perspective. We think that people should vote yes or no based on right or wrong. And the people that are actually running the show, they vote yes or no based on profit or loss. The reason the establishment is able to maintain control is because the establishment is in a position to buy the support of virtually anybody who might otherwise give them serious trouble. Right? Trump is an exception to that rule, but generally speaking, if you get to the point where you can run for president, you're bought and paid for. Not always true, but generally that's the case. They have access to money that they can buy people, they can bribe people, they can keep them in line. The idealists do not have access to that money, and they have no intention of handing out bribes to people in positions of power. They think you should do things because it's right. And modern politics, it's about who's controlling the money and in a position to pass it out. And if they are, a lot of people do as they're told.
Well, that brings me to an idea that I think would improve things a lot. You know, Jim was talking about how democracy always degenerates into socialism, and which I agree with. And, of course, some people now are talking about a convention of the states to propose amendments to the Constitution. And one constitutional amendment that I think that if it could be passed, it would improve things a lot and it would keep democracy from degenerating into socialism is that anybody who gets more than 20% of their income from taxpayer money, whether it's working for the government, whether it's government contracts, whether it's some kind of welfare, you know, anybody that gets more than 20% of their income from taxpayers' money, isn't eligible to vote. So that would keep the voting in the hands of the productive sector so that they wouldn't be overwhelmed by the parasites that want something from the government.
I get what you're saying there, but it's not, I mean, the idea that Obama can or can't vote or your senator or your congressman, that's in the next in the next election. That doesn't count for much. It would eliminate people in who are working for the government. They wouldn't be able to vote. People who are receiving welfare, well, they wouldn't be able to vote. People who are receiving Social Security wouldn't be able to vote. You know, by the time you got done, that's an interesting argument, but I don't think it's going to happen, even in a world that's not corrupt. You know, too many people would be thrown out of the process. I saw a report recently that 70% of what government spends is spent on entitlements. 70% of the budget. It's hard for me to believe that that's an accurate number, but that's I saw it recently, and it appeared to be coming from a credible source. It implies that 70% of the people are dependent on government money one way or another. And that means 70% can't vote. Who could vote? The ones who don't need government support, and that would be the oligarchy. It would be the top 10th of a percent, the top 1%, the top 10%, and even the top 30%. They could vote, and everybody else just had to, everyone else who was more or less living in poverty, they wouldn't vote, so... I don't see that as a workable solution.
No. The people that could vote would then be all the people that in the private sector make a living from their work, you know, whether it's they own a farm or they own a business or they work for some private company, you know, all the people involved in some kind of productive work in the private sector, the people that really make the country go, the people that really, you know, the real pillars of the society, you know, the people that the society really needs, you know, that should really support the society, they would be the ones to vote. And so they would, they would make decisions, they would vote based on what's necessary to keep society
productive and prospering. No, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. I think
what they want to get from somebody else.
One of the things that should be done is they've got to control these political campaign contributions because they're nothing but bribes. That's what they really are. All right? That's got to be stopped. You shouldn't be able to take a nickel from anyone who can't vote for you. Now, corporations can't vote, fine. They can't give a nickel. The only place you can get any money to support your campaign is from people who are registered to vote in your election. I can't, being down here in Texas, I can't contribute money to somebody who's running in Iowa. I can only contribute to those people that I can actually vote for if I care to. All right, that would be one thing. The other thing is this. We should set up the Congress where instead of having a maximum of 435 people in the Congress, we should have one congressman for every 50,000 representatives in this country, or thereabouts. Pick a number. But it would increase the number of congressmen. It would, and in doing so, it would make the Congress harder to control. You got more people, you need more bribes. You can expect someone is going to blow the whistle. When you only got 435 people up there and they're all getting rich off this deal, most of them are going to keep their mouths shut. We're out of time, Joe. I want to thank you for your comments. Look forward to hearing from you again. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank the producer, Jim from West Virginia, and Joe from Arkansas. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? But still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.